Blog Talk Radio.
Rising report, it's that Apple report. It's the Rising Apple report. Rising report, it's that Apple report. It's the Rising Apple report.
Yeah!
And good evening out there to all you Mets fan folk. This is the converted Mets fan, Sam Maxwell. And you are here with the Rising Apple Report. It's been a while for me on the show, but it hasn't been too long for this man. We have the Brooklyn Trolley blogger, Mike LeColand, all the way from Bensonhurst. What's going on, Mike?
What's happening, kid? Everything's good in the world, man.
Yeah, everything's good in the world. It's a good time to come on after this big, big win. It was nice. I say that because it was nice to come home from this road trip and immediately – what I do perceive as a weaker team immediately clamped down on somebody that we should be better than in, a given nine-inning span. There's a lot to talk about. Mike Conforto, the past road trip, the middle infield that was imported by Sandy Alderson this offseason has been spectacular. But I want to start with Lucas Duda, not just because he had a home run tonight, because before I came on air, I heard a commercial with him selling a Maserati dealership around the area. And I have to say, Mike, if there's anybody who has the least commercial personality appeal with his voice, it's probably Lucas Duda on this team right now.
Cut the guy a break. He can be a little stiff. You know, you and I, we talked about that briefly before we came on the air, and I was just thinking, remember when he got sent down to Triple A couple of years ago, and he was accused of sulking and, whimpering all the way down there. I think now he just tries to put on a stoic face, and behind the scenes, I think he's a lot more fun and, hyperactive, so to say.
Well, there is an account that follows him. He's kind of, it's funny because I think in his stoicness, he's actually very, he does have this weird personality, bubbling personality. You know, he was one of the ones that came out about, being like, I don't know why Kansas City is so mad about the whole Noah Syndergaard thing, so we'll be ready or whatever. And that wasn't really, that was kind of out of character for Lucas Duda at that moment.
It's always a matter of establishing comfort levels, and that comes with time. And I think he's at a point now where he's feeling very comfortable here in New York and on the team and in his role. And when people undergo that, you see the comfort level come out and it exudes itself.
Now, before Johan Cespedes was imported, they did import Kelly Johnson and Juan Uribe, both who we saw on this trip. But I'm going to segue over to Johan Cespedes' bruise here, which is probably going to keep him out through the Red Series, give him the day off, and hopefully he's good to go come I know the Giants have been struggling, but that's still going to be a big series this weekend. But what you see, and with Lucas Duda included in this conversation, is that with Neil Walker, Asdrubal Cabrera, extending the lineup like that, and that has placed Travis d'Arnaud, who has been slow to get going, probably because of his new role in the lineup. And unfortunately, he got a little banged up tonight. But that's extended the lineup to where Travis d'Arnaud has been mostly hitting eighth. And even with Johan Cespedes out, this lineup was as dynamic as it was tonight to see Neil Walker hit a home run, Conforto hit a home run, and Duda hit a home run to power the Mets to a 5-3 win over the Reds. And, of course, Conforto, Michael, it was earlier than you thought it was going to happen, but in all honesty, it should have been the way to go from the beginning with him in the three hole.
Well, perhaps, but... I didn't look at the stats, so I don't know if he still qualifies as a rookie or if he's in his sophomore season, but you got to prove yourself, and he did just that. You just can't go handing things out, you know, with blind eyes. So he earned it, and he's converting his opportunity into success. So you mentioned a lot of names out there, so we'll pick them out one by one.
Sure.
No, go for it. That's just about a Conforto. You
know, no. I said sure. So go ahead and pick them out one by one.
No, just finishing up with Conforto. You know, he's a somewhat polished kid. You know, these that get drafted out of college, as opposed to the high schoolers. You know, which Sandy Alderson dabbled mainly in his initial years. It's nice to see some of these college kids coming in and getting the job done, especially Conforto. He looks so confident out there, and even though he comes highly touted, I think he's still surprising a lot and a lot of fans. And it's just a great story, and I just hope he keeps it up in the three-hole sets. But it's, you know, that's a funny thing. We're just going to have to deal with him. All his idiosyncrasies and you know, hopefully what he supplies with his bat offsets everything. But he's just one of those cats where we're just going to have to deal with it. We knew it, yet we still wanted it. We have it, so we have to move forward with it. And he's going to do dumb things sometimes. Jumping into the stands, yeah, on the one hand, it's an indication of hustle and want and trying to be a good teammate. But on the other, you know, side of that coin, you just got to play smartly and remember why you're here, and that's to be in the lineup and swing a lethal bat and help out on the scoreboard. Up the middle, Walker and Aljubal Cabrera. Aljubal Cabrera, all I can say is smooth in the field, smooth at the plate. He's literally been our most consistent player since opening day. Obviously lately a couple other guys have been waking up and bypassed him somewhat, but Aljubal, I mean, he did nothing short but stabilize the position for us, and all our recent woes and anxieties from previous seasons have been, I mean, doused with a bucket of water. And Walker, what can you say? I mean, Daniel Murphy, who? The guy who just hit his, what, eighth home run of the month, and that's the most he ever hit in a month in his career. Will he keep it up? No, not likely. But, I mean, I think he'll be consistent. And now that he's at eight, by the time the season ends, we're going to see an eye-popping number out of him, if he just maintains his average from this moment forward.
Well, what everybody's been talking about in terms of Aprils like this are Jeff Kent in terms of second base, I believe with his 1994 start, and, of course, John Buck. John Buck, however, I don't think we're going to see with Neil Walker any kind of tail off the way John Buck basically – that's what John Buck did every single April of his career and then tailed off.
Baseball's a funny game. You know, you can only play the games and hope everything goes your way, bro.
And in terms of Aljubal Cabrera, I think that what we're seeing is something that we, you know, wasn't really talked about when analyzing whether to bring Cabrera on these past few years, which was a name that people had thrown out there about trying to get the shortstop position shored up. And you're really seeing all the things that make him an extremely smart baseball player. He's putting himself in good positions. He's recognizing what kind of pitch is being thrown, to make sure that he gets into a proper position based off of what he finds to be the way the ball is going to be hit to him. He's really, really sound at second base in terms of turning those double plays. And not to mention that we'll see in terms of his hitting, but right now the way he's hitting, the way he's focusing the bat on the ball through the zone and with the barrel of the bat, I mean, hopefully he can continue this through the entire year, and we're seeing kind of an Aljubal Cabrera renaissance after he was such an all-star with the Indians.
Yeah, well, you know, you're seeing experience and what you know, being a veteran is all about. Nothing's going to take him by surprise in the batter's box or in the field. So he's a prepared player. He's a smart player. And it's just evident. It's just evident compared to what we've had going on there recently, you know. I mean, there were days where we appreciated Ruben Tejada's efforts out in the field, but the overall game, you know, we're seeing a vast improvement over what we've had to deal with, and it's been great.
It really has been. And to shift gears, though, you know, yours familiar, he closed it out pretty soundly tonight, had a 1-2-3, and which is better than he has actually been with some of his saves recently, even though he's at, you know, he's still gotten through some games, and I don't think he's blown a save yet. But are you concerned at all? What do you see out of yours familiar, even if he was able to lock it down soundly tonight?
At the moment, he's hittable. You know, he's very hittable at the moment. And we saw that last season around the All-Star break, and then he snapped out of it. He's a big guy, and I think he generates a lot of torque in his hips. And when he comes downhill off the mound, you know, I think there's a lot there. When his slide is working, it really bites, and when his fastball is working, you know, he can bust the inside, he can elevate, and it's a good quality fastball. So I'm not necessarily worried about Jeremy's familiar per se, but he still needs to prove himself, you know, and that's not a bad thing, considering he was only given the job last season. And I wouldn't dare compare him to Mariano Rivera. That's not what I'm trying to do here, but let us, you know, just to make a comparison of just how unpredictable baseball is. I mean, in 96, the Yankees won with John Wetland, and Rivera was his understudy. And that's because he failed as a starter. So when the Yankees didn't sign Wetland the next year, they gave the job to Rivera. And what happened? You know, he disappointed in the playoffs. So everybody was against him then, and then obviously the rest was history with him. I like Jeremy's familiar. A couple of podcasts ago, I threw out there that he reminds me a little bit of Lee Smith, who was a big imposing reliever back in the 80s and the early 90s. So I have confidence in there. And like I said, what he's going through now reminds me of what he went through the All-Star break last year. But he finished strongly. And, you know, what happened in the World Series is just something different altogether. You know, once you get into the postseason, that's just a funky time.
Well, I mean, that was literally mostly defense behind him, I thought. You know, I think I've said this before. Other than, of course, the quick pitch that he did a quick pitch and then followed up with another quick pitch, and Alex Gordon did what any good hitter would do, which is figure it out and knock it straight to center field. So, you know, I think he's going to be fine. I think we're definitely seeing, yeah, like you said, he's just having to prove himself again. And that's what we're seeing right now. And he'll be fine. You know, it had been a little concerning, and I would have been a little bit more concerned. Obviously, you know, that's the thing about baseball. Who knows exactly how any given day will go. But had he blown that save against the Braves, singles hitting Braves right now, there's some funny jokes by Josh Lewin about how many singles there are in Atlanta, you know, as in terms of people, and with the Braves just constantly. I don't think they had an extra base hit against the Mets in the entire series, Mike.
Yeah.
My God.
Right. You know, and don't forget, Familia wasn't able to really establish any kind of pattern that first week of the season. So he's just now starting to get his legs under him. Let us not forget, and let us try to gain some insight into this. You know, this whole era of, you know, protecting pitchers' arms and pitch counts and limiting this and limiting that, blah, blah, you know, that bleeds into spring training as well. Their whole schedule and, you know, preparation throughout spring training has also been drawn back a bit. So, you know, it affects different pitchers in different ways. Obviously, Thor doesn't seem to be having a problem, but he's a starter. And relievers, you know, they're quirky to begin with. So, you know, not being able to pinpoint exactly what they need in spring training in the hopes of protecting these guys' arms blah, blah. You know, I'm just making things up, but I have confidence in him like you do, like you just said, and I think he'll snap out of it. Last year we thought it was maybe he might have been getting tired, considering that it was midsummer, but, you know, he had no excuse at this point. We're still in April, so I think he'll figure it out. I think it is just something mechanical in his delivery, and once he gets his hips and his legs more effectively into his pitches, I think he'll be all right.
I agree. I think he'll be perfectly fine. I'm going to segue out with this before we bring on a caller, Mike. I think what we saw on that road trip and you know what we saw tonight, which was good at home, we were seeing what we thought this team could do and the depth that they have starting to really come together. Now, the runners in scoring position, regular hits, not home runs, that's still a little bit concerning. But overall, you do like what you see in the last 10 games of the New York Mets.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way they played at home on their return from Kansas City, sometimes, that scene in Animal House, they say best. Road trip, you know, sometimes a road trip is the best medicine. And it looked like they went out there, got their penicillin and got healthy. And did well and brought that home, you know, but they're getting around to beating the teams that they should be beating. The Reds are among them, you know, the Phillies are among them, Atlanta definitely is among them. Cleveland, you know, they're competitive, but we should be able to take them. And the Mets did just that and relieved that, you know, first week of anxiety that Mets fans were feeling.
And thank God for that. Now I believe we have Long Island Mike here, because you are Mike. Long Island Mike, are you here with us?
Yes, I am.
Long Island Mike, welcome. And I'm going to give you just whatever you want to open with. Go rant for however long you want to rant.
Well, Terry, I'm not going to rant over him anymore. I'm over that. What is up with Neil Walker? That's what I want to know. That's all I want to know. He's on a power surge for this long, and he even just said he has no idea why. So I wonder if Kevin Long did something with him or if it's just natural.
Well, it sounds like he took the toe tap or something like that out of his right swing, his right-sided swing. And, you know, he's always been a good hitter on the left side, and he was never actually that bad of a hitter from the right side. So I think there's just all these different things right now that he has going for him, probably also talking to somebody like Kevin Long and hearing, new voices. That could be all the, everything that's going on.
The way I would answer that is that's baseball. I wouldn't look or read too deeply into this. Mike, if you slip a quarter 50 times, you know, you stand a very good chance that you might get 7 in a row heads, and you stand a very good chance that you might get 5 in a row tails. In the end, it should average out to 50-50 or something close to it. That's just baseball. He's in a good groove. Let's enjoy it while we can. And, perhaps a conversation along the way with Kevin Long might have helped or, you know, identified something that he could be doing better. But that's just baseball. This is a game of averages. You get hot, you get cold, and, you know, the goal is just to be consistent. Now, if he continues hitting the ball hard and sharply, I'd be happy with that if that's a necessary need to go out of the park. But, you know, he's seeing very good pitches. Today he was moved down into the fifth spot, but he's got good protection behind him now. You know, so he's no slouch. He's a professional hitter. He's been around a while. So, you know, it is what it is. My point is that's just baseball. You can't look too much into it. Just enjoy it for what it is while it lasts. Because, it will break. I mean, he's not going to finish the season with 40 home runs. He's not going to pull a Ryan Sandberg at this point. But, you know.
Right. Exactly.
As long as he keeps it up through May 1st, I'm happy. I got tickets this weekend, and I need to see that.
Yeah. I mean, look, if he hits another 10 home runs this season, I'll be thrilled. What are we all?
I predicted 26 home runs. Heading into this, had I said
he was going to hit 18 home runs this season, we would have all taken it.
When you heard it's 16 home runs.
Go ahead, Mike. When we first got him, I'm like, he's hitting 26 home runs this season. That's what I said. You can ask anyone I know. I said that. They thought I was crazy. I'm like, no, I'm not.
You know,
I'll tell you what I'm thrilled about in terms of this particular game, and we'll see what happens over the next couple games, but what I'm particularly thrilled about is that knowing the way Mets teams have performed at Citi Field and going on the road recently, other than last year where the first half, when they were inept offensively, they still continue to win at home, while they were awful on the road, and that eventually reversed basically in the second half when they got their revamped team. So what I was concerned about coming into this game was the success they had offensively, would that carry over? And I would say, you know, small sample size still, that it did. You know, I'm glad to see that these players, in particular, didn't take too psychological about coming into Citi Field and being concerned about what it would be like at home, what it would be like with these types of dimensions, you know, having seen some more hitters types of parks. And they responded pretty soundly, this current squad right now.
Yeah, well, we talked about that. There's more balance in the lineup, and, you know, all the hitters, all eight positional players, are going to see better pitchers because they have better batters behind them. You know, I mean, case in point, look at the help that Conforto's been getting now that he's in the three-hole. I mean, that's the kind of support that perhaps Travis d'Arnaud has needed these past two seasons, but we consistently bury him at the bottom of the lineup. Just saying. But these guys have infused the Mets lineup with a lot of balance, and part of that balance has been power. So, you know, we're kind of enjoying the best of both worlds right now.
Do you mind if I actually just rant on something real quick?
Please.
Now, one Modell in my area carries a Michael Conforto shirt. I started screaming at people, I want a shirt, and they don't carry it. What is this world? Some people even ask me, who's Michael Conforto? I'm like, do you live under a rock?
You know what?
Well, I mean, I think if he continues to do what he's doing, I think more and more people will know who Michael Conforto is.
You know, hello,
yeah, I mean, you know, he's only been in the three hole for probably 10 days now, or maybe even a little less. So I think that the thing is that somebody like Michael Conforto is probably overshadowed by the fact that the pitchers are superstars right now.
Right.
Except Harvey.
Right. I mean, you got to think about the business. What's going to move
still,
off the,
hey,
off
Harvey's
the shelf
still a superstar.
Not.
Harvey's still a superstar, even if he hasn't actually performed up to the superstar status. But Harvey's still a superstar.
Noah Syndergaard's better.
Hey, listen, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that chant at the next Harvey game at Citi Field, okay? I'd rather keep the Strasburg to Harvey's better when he's yelling about Strasburg. So let's go over a little bit of this road trip. I'd actually like to talk about what we saw out of the opposition that we faced. And obviously with Cleveland, we can kind of glance over that or not even talk about them at all, technically. That's just what it is. It just happens, and, you know, we have to kind of deal with it the way everything is now with that. But I don't know. Michael, your impression of Cleveland, even though we don't really need to deal with that at all ever again. this year.
I mean, yeah, you're right about that. My impressions of Cleveland. Well, you know, we finished off the series with a 6-0 shutout. You know, so that was good. But the day before, turned into a 7-5 slugfest. And you know, we opened up the series with a 6-5 win. So there was a lot of runs there that perhaps, you know, I wish we had given up less in those first two games. I believe that was Harvey started one of those games and he didn't look so, you know, Dark Knight-ish. That would be the only thing I'd take away from that. But overall, you know, they won 2 out of 3 from Cleveland. So how can we argue with that? That's the goal.
So Philadelphia has looked, on paper, I guess, or in terms of their current record, they've looked better than you expected them to be even at this point, whereas Atlanta has been either exactly where you thought of or even more in effort to get to that point. But in terms of Philadelphia, I mean, you see the young talent that that they were talking about on our preview.
I still think they're headed for the cellar. I think the Braves will elevate themselves by the time this is done. The Phillies, they just happened to get healthy against the Mets that first series at Citi Field.
Yeah, and the Mets came back, and in terms of, you know, the Phillies took the last game against them, but they were able to battle Vince Velasquez well. When Vince Velasquez was the talk of the league after that 16 strikeout performance shutout against the Padres.
Yeah, so, you know, so far everything's going okay. It's going well.
Exactly. So you were talking about Atlanta a little bit, but let's finish up with Atlanta having swept them in 3 games. I mean, you know. Obviously, they're kind of just chucking this season out and hoping they can collect a Michael Conforto type of a draft pick this coming June.
Yeah.
But, you know, with their closing Turner Field out, which, of course, Mets fans are happy to see happen, what is your right now, what you know, looking at Atlanta, what's your opinion of them?
Well, they're in full-blown rebuilding mode, so, you know, there's not much you can expect out of them. Freddie Freeman came up multiple times in that series. With the opportunity to really ruin, you know, Met fans' days. But he didn't come through, and, you know, that's not really his norm. He's a good ball player. So, you know, but we pretty much pounded them. I mean, we pounded them 6-3, 8-2, and then the series finale, you know, that was a close one, 3-2. But you look at that series, and the Mets took care of what they needed to take care of, and, you know, the pitching came through. That's when we finally said to say, this team is really starting to click now, and hopefully by the end of the month we're running on all cylinders. So, you know, the Braves was a good team at a good time, and they did, you know, they did well. So I'm happy.
Agreed. So let's finish up Long Island Mike. What do you think of
the
opposition that we just watched?
Oh, with Cleveland, I really don't care. Like you said, we don't face them again. But Philly, when you guys had those, the writers on for like the Phillies and Braves, and I wasn't able to make that show, said to myself, the Phillies are going to be better than what people think because, they just have a lot of young talent coming up with pitching and hitting. I really love Odubel Herrera. I love Vince Velasquez. Sorry if I'm pronouncing any of these names wrong. And yeah, they got a lot of young talent coming up. In the next 2 years, they'll be competitors.
This year, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure if I agree with you about their level of success this year. But you know, you got to pay your dues.
Well, I think that their weakest link, obviously, and usually with most losing teams, this is the weakest link, is that bullpen, which is extremely inconsistent considering they're 9-10 right now. You know, the lineup, even though they've been they're down at the bottom of the league, they still seem to have a little bit more spunk than anything Atlanta was able to present. But it's that bullpen that you're just not sure what you're going to get. The starting pitching, this young starting pitching, I mean, which most of the starting pitching they've brought in over the last year and a half to 2 years, that's pretty impressive right now, Mike. and that's Mike Lacola.
Yeah, I mean, when you start rebuilding in earnest, you know, eventually you start to uncover little gems and, you know, along the way, they'll be all right, but just not this year.
No, not this year at all.
I think there's a learning curve to all that, you know, so I think they'll have to take their lumps this year again. But by next year, they'll be starting to shape up and heading in a more upwards direction.
And then from far and away is Washington right now. And we're not going to see them until mid-May, which is kind of strange. But at the same time, and I'll start with Long Island Mike here, by the time the Mets and the Washington meet each other, we're going to have a pretty solid idea of who these two teams are, where they are in the standings, and how important, you know, I think baseball almost, you know, they knew what they were doing by pushing it off that far.
Why they did that? I mean, probably just to create some drama, get some more money in their pockets and all. Second off, with the Nationals, were the Twins trying to win yesterday? They pitched to Bryce Harper when they had a lead, and Bryce Harper hit a tying home run when he wasn't even in the starting lineup. So why don't you just pitch around him? It's like they weren't even trying to win that game. So they just cost the Mets a game lead. Well, a game back, I should say. So it's stupid that we have to wait this long, but it's for their own good probably to get some money in their pocket.
Yeah, the anticipation will be high. And Michael Colon, you know, when looking at that, what do you think about it? Do you think there's anything to that, that they literally thought to themselves, well, this is probably going to be the cream of the crop in the East come May?
You know, to address Long Island Mike's point, stupid is as stupid does. Maybe he's got a point, you know. The Twins have no business to pitching to him in that situation. But,
right.
Regardless, the Nationals are going to be there. It's going to be us and them. We'll spend days in first place. They'll spend days in first place. Right now, they have the advantage by 3 games. But we close that gap somewhat after a little bit of a sluggish start. But what I do see already is Dusty Baker living up to his reputation. He's already starting to extend his starting pitchers. And, you know, come postseason, that always poses a problem for him.
Well, that's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, you know, at the same time, you know, we were so high coming into the season. A very, very strange start to the schedule that clearly, I think, affected the rhythm of the hitters with so many off days in that first week. And now we're playing catch-up again, and I wouldn't say exactly knocked us off our stool, but, you know, I still think it's probably good for this team, just the Mets in general as a franchise, a team. You know, last year there was no expectations. There was a lot of expectations this year, and Washington didn't have as many expectations, and they got started kind of as hot as we got started last year. So, I think there's always something to battling back. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I want Washington at their best. There's a very, very small fraction of a percent in the back of my mind that, you know, Washington overachieved, and that opened the door for, you know, a Mets division flag last year. I don't want that feeling. I want to make sure we beat these guys at their best if we're going to beat them at all. And, you know, that's the way I go. You know, here's the other thing I go by. You know, the old baseball saying, every team is going to lose 60 games, every team is going to win 60 games. It's what they do with the other 42 games that matter. If you go by that math right now, the Mets are 3-0. You know, and Washington is 10-0. That's the difference we need to make up.
Right, exactly. It's going to be interesting, like looking at it right now and seeing the way the East is.
I should have
laid out.
Before.
Right. Well, it's funny because all of these teams have, over the last 15 to 20 years, have all had their place at the bottom of the National League. I mean, you look at it, Washington, New York, Mets, Philadelphia, Miami, and Atlanta. It's quite the cycle that this National League East goes through, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you got, you know, we know why Miami is just all over the place because of Jeff Luria. Atlanta, we know that they've always been in good hands. And, you know, they had a upper, you know, front office, somewhat of a regime change. And they are in, you know, they made it no secret. They're in rebuilding. Philadelphia, their situation is common to us. They held on to their guys too long. As Branch Rickey used to say, it's better to trade a person too early than too late. Ruben Amaro Jr. made the mistake. He held on for a bunch of these guys for too long instead of trying to infuse the team with more talent, perhaps starting, I don't know, 2 years ago or even 3 years ago. The Mets, obviously, we went through a real long rebuilding process. Washington just slowly evolved into this team, you know, and they did it through the draft. They did it with Harper and Strasburg. And, you know, when called for, the owner stepped up. He's a motivated owner. He wants to win. And he dipped into his pocket, you know. So every story in the National League East, we understand. We understand why these standings are what they are.
Right, exactly. I'm gonna segue out of just modern baseball, but basically, the Mets and where they are. But I'd also like to go to the rest of the league before we segue out into number 30. Because tonight we're not going to really pass the hour all that late, you know, getting up to the midnight hour here. But since it's, you know, it's early in the year, but at the same time, we haven't had too many podcasts, and we're coming up to the end of April. So it's always interesting to see where everything is shaping up as we set forth on the May. And in the American League East, the Yankees won the night, so they are currently 8-10, still under the Tampa Bay, who's 9-10, then Toronto's 10-11, but Boston is 10-9, 1.5 games back behind Baltimore at 11-7. The White Sox off to a fast start at 14-6, right in front by a game of Kansas City at 12-6, Cleveland 9-7, Detroit 9-9, and then Minnesota 5-14, round out the Central in the American League East. Oakland 10-10 and Texas 10-10. That one's all pretty even. Across the West right now, Seattle 9-9 at 500, just kind of underneath all of those two other teams. The Angels 8-11 and a bad start for Houston, who basically in some fashion to us is trying to bounce back. Is trying to continue a renaissance from last year. But and maybe we'll bring this up before the end. The difference between the Johannes Cespedes coming to the Mets and Carlos Gomez coming to the Mets, who eventually ended up, instead of going to that deal, going to Houston. In Washington, 14-4. In the East, Washington, 14-4. The Mets, 11-7, three games behind Washington. Philadelphia, 9-10. Miami, 6-11. Atlanta, 4-15. The Cubs off to a fantastic start. Have taken control of the Central by 3.5 games, 14-5 over the St. Louis Cardinals, 10-8, and the Pittsburgh Pirates right behind them at 10-9. Cincinnati 9-11 and Milwaukee 8-11. The West with the Dodgers actually performing right now, Miami having tied them 2-2 in the bottom of the fifth. They lead the West right now 12-7. Arizona, who is everybody's sleeper pick, you know, it's kind of the trendy pick for the West domination at 10-10. Colorado 9-9, San Francisco 9-11, and San Diego 7-12. Long Island, Mike. Obviously, it's very, very early in the season, but it's I love standings watching. I love taking a look at this even this early throughout the year.
Yeah, I do too. The one thing that I find funny is that all the Yankee fans are complaining about no offense. So all my friends that are Yankee fans, I'm like, welcome to the 2016 early season Mets. And they come back at me saying, oh, so we're going to make it to the World Series too? I'm like, no, sorry, you're not. But the Cubs, they're really impressing me. I think we all know they're going to make it very far. What happened to Kyle Schwarber tearing his ACL or an MCL or whatever he tore is very unfortunate, but they have depth in the outfield, so they'll do fine there. Who did you say was the Twins? Okay, yeah, the Twins. They're just awful. I'm just going to put that
They're following up a pretty uplifting season last year with quite the miserable opening.
As in the Arizona Diamondbacks, I don't know why people are picking them to win the West. They're not that good. No, I'm sorry, they're not that good. I don't see what people think. They have Cranky. Oh, my God, big deal.
Those uniforms, Mike, to segue to you, Mr. Bensonhurst, Mike, regarding those standings, these uniforms, obviously they unveiled, like, some weird gray ones, and then I saw what Greinke was wearing tonight with some fading type of Arizona color on the sleeves. I mean, if they're not going to end up taking that division, they're certainly trying to stretch back into time with some of these uniforms.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember the Astros uniforms of the 70s and early 80s, so, I mean, I've seen wackier things. I'm not a fan of uniform experimentation. I'm a traditionalist. I like the old-fashioned uniforms, either plain, pinstripe, simple, you know, piping, nothing too out there. But, you know, I can't speak for another generation. For instance, what I don't like, you guys might like that, you know.
I do.
Yeah, so there you go. There's proof in the pudding. So you have two different generations with two different takes, so. You know, it is what it is, Sam. So, you know, they already have us, per se, Sam, the older people. Older people are brand loyal, you know, so they can pretty much do anything they want to us, and they're not going to lose us. The trick in business is always to attract that new customer.
That's true. Yep. That's true. I mean, Arizona is certainly, you know, combined with the roster revamp, along with these uniforms, are trying something different. And, you know, that's what you guys sometimes got to do as a franchise. And San Diego tried last year, and it just unfortunately failed. I think
San Diego, it's funny you mentioned that, because they haven't gotten their uniform right since their inception. Oh, my God, the different variations that team has gone through, and everyone has been more hideous than the next.
Wouldn't you take the brown uniforms again right now? I mean, they're actually starting to have the yellow and brown color coordination. But I don't think they're going to have the exact exact throwback replica. But I do think they're going to have something going along those lines.
I get the insistence of the colors. I mean, if you go back to the original meaning of the San Diego Padre with the brown cloak and whatnot, there's still a chance for them to make this work. They can make that color scheme work. It's difficult to pull off. But if they would just feature the old logo, the Padre swinging the bat, you know, make that the primary focus of, you know, of what the San Diego Padres imbibe. That would be the way to go. Too many times they strayed, and they just lost the complete meaning, or you know, they just lost touch with what their original business plan was, you know, so to say.
Right, exactly.
I think that swinging Padre is one of the greatest logos in baseball, but they
agreed. I totally agree with you. And you know, we're certainly familiar with mismanagement. Luckily, there's less of it going on right now. So uniform talk is always fun. It's certainly one of my favorite parts of baseball and sports in general. It's certainly the uniform, and you know, whether it be hockey, whether it be baseball, or whether it be basketball, football, or even regular actual football, not American football for that matter. Long Island Mike, here's a good little tangent right now. What is your favorite uniform? You know, because other than the Mets, let's discount the Mets only because I think all of us could possibly agree that the Mets uniform is the best in baseball. But whether it be baseball or any other sport, favorite uniform?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
I really do like the Diamondbacks one. I'm sorry. I like their evolution, they called it. I really like the colors on it. It looks like more futuristic and everything. I love the Diamondbacks one.
And that's totally right now your current favorite uniform throughout sports.
Yes.
Okay, you know, I need to give this uniform a good look right now. Hold on for a second. Mike, let's go to you, Mike, while I look this thing up.
Well, that's such a tough question. In baseball, let me start with the American League. I appreciate Detroit's uniform. I like Chicago's uniform with the black pinstripes and the old English lettering socks on it. They're another team that underwent so many transformations in their uniforms. But those two are some of my favorites. And then, you know, the other ones, they get a little carried away from me. In the National League, I mean, what's not to like about St. Louis's uniform? That uniform, that logo is so classic and remains untouched. And I give them credit for that. You know, they're like the Yankees. They just don't tamper with the uniform much, and I appreciate that. Other than that, you know, I do like the Mets uniform, and I think our logo is one of the best in all of baseball as well. But if I had to pick another one, that's tough, bro. And I just I don't know where to go there. So, you know, I'll just stick it. I'll just keep it with Detroit and what I say, Chicago White Sox latest incarnation of the black and white and the socks on it. Phillies I've always hated. Always. I thought they were atrocious. Chicago, never really been a fan of. Pittsburgh Pirates of the 70s with their 11 different combinations. That was interesting, but they minimized that now. So I just leave it at that. I like the old-style uniform. If you're one of the original eight from the American League or one of the original eight from the National League and you haven't tampered with it much over the years, I appreciate it. Although, if that said, I've never, never, ever liked the Cincinnati Reds uniform.
Really? That's interesting. Even the ones without the drop black shadow?
Yeah, there's just something about that Reds uniform, the C and the Reds inside. I just never felt it, you know?
Well, going back to the Arizona one, I do like the fact that, because, you know, it kind of reminds me about the fact that I wish when the Royals or anybody wearing the powder blue, I wish they would go, or even like the Mets for that matter. The Mets look better in their blue shirts when they're in the Brooklyn Royal Giants uniforms and they have blue pants. I'd rather an entire blue uniform. I just think it looks aesthetically better on the field. And with the Royals and their powder blue, I wish they would have the powder blue pants again. And that's kind of what I like about the gray Arizona ones. It seems as if this is now their official road uniform. It doesn't look like they have any other road uniform going right now. And can maybe Long Island Mike, you can explain to me. So they have two incarnations of it, one with a little bit of a green in there. But do they have a collar on the other one?
Hold on, let me check again.
It looks like a collar to me. I looked at the evolutions here, 2016 Arizona Diamondback uniforms, and it's just Greinke Arizona uniforms, including the throwback one, the purple one, which is weirdly classic, actually, even though it's kind of ugly. But it's still, like, you can think something extremely ugly and still have an appreciation for it, because I did watch them win a World Series in the uniform.
Because I see what you're saying, but it could just be the angle.
It looks like a collar, which should be a little bit of a throwback to those Chicago White Sox uniforms from the late 70s, Mike.
It is a collar.
Again, a franchise who just spent so many years just not getting it right and screwing it up.
Well, they had somebody like Bill Veeck who really knew how to market and maybe sometimes did a little bit too much marketing.
I mean, I remember when the White Sox donned white and red uniforms. Wearing red socks and red trim. I'm like, what the hell is that all about?
It didn't make any sense.
Pictures now.
Okay. Okay. We're going to move on from our uniform talk. Let's get out of these Diamondback tabs that I opened. And I'm going to go to the number 30. And this is episode 130. And, Mike, you know, just a quick celebration. It's pretty remarkable we've gotten this far. And, of course, we've had some more podcasts than just 130, since sometimes we'll do specials. But it's pretty remarkable it's all the way to 130 now.
Well, it's called following through, man. When you start something, you follow it through. And here we are, 130-plus episodes later. Congratulations to you.
Good luck, Fluffin, right there.
Well, you know what? Congratulations to us, and congratulations to the 1930 Brooklyn Robins. They weren't all that bad for a Brooklyn Robins team. They finished fourth in the National League out of eight, as Mike was saying. 86-68, Mike. That's a pretty solid record for a Brooklyn Robins team. Which is, by the way, I'm sorry for everybody who doesn't know, but the Dodgers at the time were nicknamed the Robins because of the manager, Wilbert Robinson.
It wasn't a bad season for them at all. I mean, they finished just a game behind the New York Giants. It was the Cardinals who took the pennant in the National League that season. So, you know, I mean, at face value, yeah, they were a good season, competitive season. They just fell short. And the rivalry itself must have been outstanding that season, like I said, because they only finished a game apart from each other in the standings.
Well, you know what? In 1930, and this probably produced the renovations in terms of the money for the team, they finished second in attendance with 1,097,329 compared to the Polo Grounds and the New York Giants' attendance of 868,714, which was number third in the league. But they renovated the place to add the outfield seats, which eventually brought it to about 35,000 for the eventual big heyday of Dodger baseball coming up by 1930, by the end of the 30s and the early 40s, and then, of course, drifting into the 50s. The Giants, they finished 87-67, finished third in the league, like you said, Mike, one game in front of the Dodgers. And it's interesting. You look at the best player by WAR on the Giants and then on the Dodgers. First, we got Bill Terry at 7.6, and on the Dodgers, the best player was Babe Herman. And it's hard to not have a smile on your face knowing anything about Babe Herman, Mike, when Babe Herman comes across your consciousness.
Yeah, you know, famous Brooklyn Dodgers. So, interesting team. You know, I'm comparing this team with the 1930s Giants team. And they really had no business finishing as close to the Giants as they did. That Giants team was stacked. And this Giant team, this Dodger team in this season only really featured Dazzy Vance on the mound as their, you know, primary ace. So it's an interesting view as to how they actually managed to finish. The other team just must have been so colossally bad.
Well, it does seem, you know, I can guess that, you know, John McGraw was still managing at the time. I forget, when did you say John McGraw finished?
John McGraw was at the end. He was 2 years away from his final season. Let me see, 1930. McGraw, the next season he completed a full season. And then in 1932 he shared duties with Bill Terry, and Bill Terry took over the Giants from then forward. So when I hear Bill Terry's name,
I can't help but think of his quip a couple of years later. Which eventually probably stopped them from winning the pennant when Bill Terry uttered to a news writer, you know, who was asking him, "So what do you think? You know, what do you think about Brooklyn's chances?" And he went, "Brooklyn, they still in the lead?" And that didn't sit well with the Brooklyn folk, for sure. And I remember Casey said something. He had a famous quote at the time for it. And even though Casey Stengel, who was the manager of the Dodgers at the time in 1934. I'm jumping the gun a little bit here. You know, we got three episodes until we can kind of talk about this, but to tease it a little bit, we have that to look forward to, and some things that occurred. I'll try to you know, build up a better, do a little bit better research and have some quotes to send you guys, because it's pretty, it's, you know, for anybody who knows Casey and knows about the type of things he could say, it's always fun to hear what Casey has to say, especially in such a rivalry as the Dodgers and the Giants. So, So moving on from a little history lesson, we're going to go over to the players that have worn number 30 in the history of the New York Mets, and it's quite the interesting list, Mike. I'm actually going to start with one of the heroes of tonight, Michael Conforto. He is the most recent number 30 in this this awesome list. Andrew Brown, who is my personal number 30. I'm definitely kidding on that. David Ardsma, Josh Tolley, Raul Casanova, Aaron Seeley, Cliff Floyd, I'm a fan of that one, Jorge Toca, Alan Watson, Alberto Castillo, Doug Linton, Mel Stottlemyre, Mike Torres, Mike Scott in his Mets career, Jackson Todd, Hank Webb, Bob Miller, Hank Webb again, Nolan Ryan twice, and Dennis Ribamp. Nolan Ryan, of course, sticks out. He was a famous 30 in Mets history. Mike, I cede the floor to you for this one.
I have an Nolan Ryan's jersey, so that's one that got away. Unbelievable. There's a couple of names on this list that I remember for reasons other than the Mets, like Mike Scott. That brings to memory the 1986 World Series, but when he was on the Mets, he pitched the game at the height of Fernando Valenzuela mania. And the Mets were shut out 1-0 that game. Mike Scott pitched, and he pitched a brilliant game. And we knew then that Mike Scott was going to be a very, very good pitcher. So that's why in the 86 NLCS, I should have said, the 86 NLCS, you know, all this talk of cheating and a bucket full of scuffed baseballs and whatnot, Mets fans, I think, knew a little better, thinking that he was a pitcher, a good pitcher, and he demonstrated that in those few seasons with the Mets. Mike Torres, I remember him giving up Bucky Dent's home run in the 1978 AL East one-game playoff in 78. I remember him as the pitcher on the mound when the Yankees won the World Series in 77. And then, of course, I remember him with the Mets. But Cliff Floyd, like you say, to me, he's the guy on this list. I became a huge Cliff Floyd guy, big fan of his, and he was real good with the fans. And if you remember, when he caught the final out of the division clincher in September of 2006, he turned around and he showed the fans in the bleachers the ball, and I thought that was a good gesture on his part, you know, to share that with the fans. So good for him. I was happy Cliff Floyd was a Met. I was a big fan of his. Willie Randolph kind of mismanaged that final game in the NLCS in 2006, and Cliff Floyd was kind of involved in that, but, you know, I'll never hold it against them.
I would agree with you. Yeah, Cliff Floyd was one of my favorites before I was an official Mets fan. When I was a Yankee fan, I really liked the Cliff Floyd, and that was before his, you know, breakout season when he had a little bit more depth around him in 2006. Looking at this list, I mean, Josh Tolley, it's interesting because, you know, Josh Tolley is just one of those names that represent that mediocre era that we just went through. But he was still fun to root for, and he had some cool hits to watch. I remember, unfortunately, we lost the game because Frank Francisco sucked. But I do remember Josh Tolley getting a pretty awesome game-tying hit against the Giants. Probably 2012 on like a Friday night or something like that. Finishing the list, David Ardsma, I believe, is actually the number one Met when listed alphabetically, according to Greg Prince, who's a friend of ours, Faith and Fear and Flushing, and I believe that is something that he wrote in Amazing Again at the beginning when was talking about the New York Mets and their history, and everybody should run out there and buy Amazing Again. How the 2015 New York Mets brought the magic back to Queens. It's available on Amazon and wherever books are sold. Shameless plug for our friend Greg there. I think that's a good way to segue out into our last. But I guess before I do that, I think Michael Conforto, if he continues this way, does have a chance to take over for number 30. I'll start with actually before the last word. I'm sorry, Long Island Mike. I totally spaced on going to you about number 30.
All right. As you know, I'm a youngster, so I only know two names: Michael Conforto and Nolan Ryan. Obviously, you know Michael Conforto. Nolan Ryan, excellent pitcher. What else can you say about him, really? Michael Conforto, savior tonight, basically, again. Man, yeah. Like you said, he could take over number 30 if he continues this way.
All right, thank you. And we appreciate always your call. I'll start with you, Long Island Mike, for your last word. Excuse me.
Okay, for my last word, Modell's better get a shirt in for me soon, or I'm going to go berserk. And second off, let's go Mets. Harvey better get his act together, or Noah Syndergaard will become the ace of the team.
Yeah, we kind of refrained from talking about some of the struggles of Matt Harvey tonight. I didn't really bring it up at any point. I think he's certainly going to get it together. I think that we know just from his track record that routine has a lot to do with this, and hopefully as we settle into these games that routine will bring him back into the pitcher that we know he can be. He battled through the last one and was definitely saved by that Johannes Cespedes throw to home plate, which is just he's one of my favorite players right now to watch. Mike, I'll go to you for our last word.
My last word, I'm glad that everything seems and we're being told that everything is well with Jacob DeGrom and Mrs. DeGrom's child. Hope them all the best in that regard. That was a story that we were keeping tabs on, and I'm glad everything worked out for them. So congratulations on their son's birth and ultimate recovery, and now that he's home, hopefully everything gets normalized for them. That said, I take, as Sam knows, a moment of every final word now that I'm a participant of, and demand that the New York Mets erect a memorial for Joan Payson at Citi Field. It's high time that gets done.
I would agree for certain on that last point. And, yeah, we also didn't talk too much about Jacob DeGrom, so to finish that up, it's nice to hear. He was very, very open regarding what it was like going through what he was going through regarding his baby down there. And for those not in the know, the baby, unfortunately, had some breathing issues, and luckily it sounds like he's back to normal now as young an infant as he is. And it was nice to see him, even though obviously there was a little rust, it was nice to see him settle in to this new year, and hopefully we'll continue to see the entire pitching staff performing the way they are right now. My last word is settle in. Baseball, it's here. Basically, after every Mets win, whenever it's available, I think it's about an hour and a half on MLB TV, I do tune in as quick as I possibly can just to kind of go through it. And I like listening to the guys. I like listening to Keith, to Ron, to Gary, whoever's on that night, if not the three of them. And it's just always fun getting their take of everything outside of just the highlights that we see when the Mets score runs. There's all these little details that you miss just being on the radio, even though the radio guys are absolutely fantastic, and it's loads of fun having both Howie Rose and Josh Lewin to listen to and paint the picture for us of the Mets baseball going on. But if anybody out there doesn't have MLB TV, I highly suggest it. It's really fun to tune into some of the other games going around the league, and also if you do have cable at home. Finally, it's just been way too long, but apparently soon we will have the ability, if you have a passcode for your cable company, you'll be able to watch your team on MLB TV with that passcode through the cable company. And that is a long time coming, even though the cable companies kind of are just in business still because of sports. But luckily, they finally figured that whole blackout thing, which I thought was always really silly. It's because I wouldn't be trying to access my team if I was anywhere near a television. So why are you blacking it out for me anyway? So I'm glad to hear that's getting sorted out, and hopefully we'll have a little bit more free reigns in the future to watch the baseball team that we want to watch. And I believe that is my last word. I thank Long Island Mike. Thanks for always for calling in. Mike LeColon, appreciate you joining us tonight as well from Bensonhurst. It's nice to get on the air. It's been a while for me.
Thank you for taking care of hosting duties, Will.
And with that, I bid you farewell. I think I'm going to unmute this Dodger game I have. The Miami Marlins, who are in our division, are up 3-2 right now in the top of the seventh. And I'd like to listen to a little bit of Vin Scully in his last season as a broadcaster. So with that, I bid you farewell in the city of Brooklyn, where he began, Vin Scully did. And let's go Mets, everybody.
Let's go Mets, and let's go Islanders.
Hey,